From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Mark Report. It's the 28th day of April 2009. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities. He's in Newmarket, Indiana. And K-State's Dan O'Brien will join us today to take a closer look at the energy markets. In agricultural news, the U.S. says there is no excuse for foreign markets to ban U.S. pork imports. Canada wants a better label on U.S. meat products. And the U.S. EIA says a proposal to require 25% of the nation's energy supply to come from renewable sources won't affect average consumer energy prices for more than a decade. Dave Dickey will have details of these and other stories shortly. We'll also hear how planting progress is going in Illinois, Iowa, Nebraska, and Minnesota today. You won't believe how much ahead. That's right, ahead of schedule the corn farmers in Iowa are at this point. And in just 26 minutes, meteorologist Don Day will join us to take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast and tell us why they're setting at the side of the field today. So stay with us for this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of Public Radio from the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
In Chicago, on a Tuesday afternoon, futures finished in the wheat pit a bit higher for the day. May contract at 510.5, up 2.5. July at 522, 2.5 higher. And September at 549, up 2.5. Kansas July wheat at 572 for the hard red, up 0.5 cent. May futures in the corn pit from Chicago, 375 on a settlement, 2.75 higher. July at 383.5, up 2.75. September, 292.75, up 2.75. And December, up 2.75 as well at $4.04.25. Since the March at 416.75, 3.75 higher. May oats down 0.75 cents at $1.86.25. May soybean futures, 989.5, down 15.25. July, 983, down 14 cents. August down 11.25 at 964.5, and September futures at 931, down 7.75. November beans, $9 even, down 4.5 cents. May bean meal at 311.90, down $2.10. May oil at 34.90, down 64 on the afternoon. From the CME side, livestock futures finished the nearby April at 85.90 for the live cattle, down 25 cents. June up 15 cents at 81.95. April feeders at 99.35, a dime lower, and the May lean hogs at 63.30, down $2.70. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Futures finished the crude oil at $49.92 a barrel in the June contract, 22 cents lower on its settlement. July at $51.09, down 43 cents. May ethanol at $1.55.09 unchanged. And June futures in the ethanol at $1.55.06, just about a tenth of a cent higher. Natural gas futures at $3.32, 6.7 cents higher. In the nearby May, the RBOB gasoline finished at $1.39.7, down 6 cents for the May contract, and May heating oil at $1.31.7, 5 tenths of a cent lower. Propane futures at 63.2 cents, down 7 tenths of a cent, and the gold futures at $892.80, down $14.60 an ounce. The Dow Jones Industrial Average currently stands at 8,074. That's just about 49 points higher on the afternoon, and the U.S. dollar at 85.15 is down 0.55 for the day. The CRB index at 217.18 is down 1.01.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
And near the bottom of this hour, we'll talk with Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. A complete look at the agricultural weather forecast at that time. And if you'd like to hear what Don or other meteorologists have to say that we talked to, you can always do that at our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. It's a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Todd Gleason. It's a Tuesday afternoon. On the line with us, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Wayne.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
Was the story all about China and some potential cancellation of cargoes of soybeans today?
Oh, I think that was one of the big ones, of course, is why we saw the old beans tumble a little bit. You know, once again, we had that story last week, and it didn't come to fruition. You know, and then there's, of course, swine flu that shouldn't even be called swine flu on every broadcast on TV, just keeping most everybody out of the market, not wanting to add new market length at this point in time. You know, the weather forecasts, we got about an inch and a half of rain here. You know, tomorrow's supposed to be a clear day, but Thursday, Friday is supposed to be rain again. Tremendously good progress in Iowa and out west a little bit, but Illinois and Indiana showing very slow movement along the way. And, you know, yesterday we got a little bit of corn planted over in this area, but we're still way behind. And with the moisture that we got last night and what's going on with the forecast, why it's not going to be a very good April as far as corn planting goes in the eastern Midwest, Todd.
Boy, did the numbers out of Iowa and Minnesota surprise the devil out of you of how much actually they managed to put in the ground last week. I think both of them are in that 40% range now.
Yeah, they're just shooting way ahead and doing tremendous, and you know, we're glad for them up there. Last year they had some real problems getting corn in the ground, and they needed to have a good year, but it did surprise us that we were along that far. It does tell us the size of our machinery now. It does make such a difference, and things do go in the ground a lot faster than they ever did used to, Todd. So, but, you know, if we get it past the middle of May before we get moving in the eastern Corn Belt, why, we're still going to have a lot of corn planted after optimum dates, and you know, that makes people think a little bit along the lines of that the total yield might be down. And one of the other things as we look today and was that the there's talk of you know, some acres that could get switched if they don't get in the field by a certain time, and a little more talk along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
As to what might not be as many corn acres, maybe a few more bean acres, but you know, we were still seeing some spread unwinding in the old beans in the beans there today, with the new crop only being down 4.5 and the old crop being down 15.25. So, you know, we're still seeing that spread being unwound. But you know, when it's all said and done, the July the old crop beans are more positive in the long run here, and so is the wheat. As we look at the wheat and spring wheat delays happening all over, and a lot of the acres out west in Oklahoma, Kansas, and parts of Texas that were maybe damaged a lot more than was really considered with that frost. So, you know, we're just not seeing everything happen quite the way it would seem logically or fundamentally sound. But all in all, why a day that we didn't see disaster like we did yesterday because of the swine flu, and I think we need to change the name that when we talk about it to North Atlantic flu or something.
So, well,
just because I don't think it's hogs doing all that stuff.
Well, the traffic from within the industry says certainly, and USDA agrees, that this has not been found in the U.S. herd. And the traffic suggests that this particular virus isn't found anywhere on the planet in the hog herd, so that the spread if from traffic, at least, suggests that it's
those evil vegetarians spreading this word. No.
Now, Wayne.
We shouldn't be throwing stuff and bombing the wrong industry here. The poor pork industry has taken a real hit here the last couple of days. As we look at the hogs, you know, we've been down over $5 in the hogs the last 2 days, and you know, and an undeserved hit just because of the name they decided to use. And we sure hate to see that. If they were really at fault for this, it's one thing, but we sure like to see the hog industry see a rebound after this.
Yeah, one final note, the corn pit performed pretty well in the face of what was happening in the beans today, I think. Were you impressed?
Yes, the corn pit held its own quite well today, Todd.
Yeah, all right, thanks much.
Thanks.
That's Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana, comes to us each and every Tuesday right here on the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Lernard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products, including Asgrow's new Roundup Ready 2-yield soybeans. Lernard Seed Service provides services to help customers in East Central Illinois maximize profits. 217-497-2270.
Dave Dickey is here now. He'll help us take a look at the agricultural news for the afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Mark Report from Illinois Public Media.
In agricultural news, USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack says foreign markets have no excuse to ban U.S. pork, even though there have been 20 confirmed human cases of a new form of swine flu in several states. Vilsack says, quote, "The discovery of this virus in humans is not a basis for restricting imports of commercially produced U.S. pork and pork products." He goes on to say, any trade restrictions would be inconsistent with World Organization for Animal Health guidelines. Meanwhile, today, Russia has extended its ban on raw meat imports caused by the outbreak of swine flu to the U.S. states of New York and Ohio. The ban also applies to all types of meat from Mexico and the states of Texas, California, and Kansas, and to raw pork from Alabama, Arizona, Arkansas, Georgia, Louisiana, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Florida, countries of Central America and the Caribbean. Canada has revised a complaint at the World Trade Organization about a U.S. meat labeling law that Canadian producers have complained has hurt their hog and cattle sales. Canada filed a complaint about the law at the WTO last year, but suspended it in January after the U.S. government revised the final version, making it more flexible. USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack warned meat packers in February that he would rewrite the rule unless they voluntarily made labels more explicit. Canada has asked for more details about Vilsack's request, but failed to receive clarification. The U.S. Energy Information Administration says a proposal requiring 25% of the nation's electricity to come from renewable energy won't affect average U.S. power prices for more than a decade. The EIA analysis found that a growing renewable energy requirement will not start to affect average national electricity prices until after 2020. The peak impact is estimated at 2.7% to 2.9% as requirements ramp up. The agency estimates wind and biomass will be the predominant resources used to meet the proposed standard. Solar and geothermal will also see considerable growth. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming at Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Mark Report and Commodity Week. You know, producers made significant planting progress in this past week as warm temperatures coupled with strong winds helped dry out wet soils, allowing field work to be done at a rapid pace. By the week's end, 22% of the 2009 corn crop was in the ground. That's 13 points ahead of last year, but 6 points behind the 5-year average pace. In Iowa, the largest corn-producing state, planting progress was aided by favorable conditions, allowing producers to plant some 41% of their crop during the week. A larger increase was also reported in Minnesota, where producers planted 40% of their crop. On the soybean side of the ledger, growers have planted nationwide 3% of their acreage, 1 percentage point ahead of last year, but 2 points behind the normal pace. Planting was underway in Iowa and Minnesota, two of the three largest soybean-producing states, ahead of last year, and the average pace by 2 points and 1 point, respectively. In the Delta, planting progress was at or behind average. Limited planting activity had occurred in Missouri, North Carolina, and Tennessee. We'll have complete reports from the statisticians in the Midwest right now.
This is Brad Schwab reporting on crop progress and conditions for the week ending April 26th. Above-normal temperatures and brisk winds were a welcomed occurrence last week. However, the above-normal precipitation was not. Soggy conditions persisted during most of last week, allowing only about a two-day window of opportunity in most areas to get any planting and field work done. Sadly, this is reminiscent of last year's spring weather patterns. Topsoil moisture ended the week slightly better than last week at 42% adequate and 58% surplus. The greatest accumulations of precip fell in the northern half of the state, ranging from just over an inch to nearly 2.5 inches. Corn planting advanced by only 3 percentage points last week at 4% complete, compared to 5% last year and 43% for the 5-year average. The two crop reporting districts leading the state in planting progress were the West Southwestern and the Southwest districts at 11% complete. The soft red winter wheat crop has benefited from the recent warm, moist conditions and was reported in 1% very poor, 7% poor, 23% fair, 52% good, and 17% excellent condition. This has been Brad Schwab, Chief Crop Statistician with the Illinois Field Office of the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in Springfield.
This is Greg Tayson from USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, Iowa Field Office, with the weekly crop and weather report for the week ending April 26, 2009. Iowa farmers took advantage of nearly ideal conditions last week before idling their planters as weekend storms soaked recently planted fields. Sunny skies, warm temperatures, and variable winds set the stage for a furious corn planting pace across the western two-thirds of Iowa. Occasional showers and scattered thunderstorms sharply curtailed field work on Saturday, and widespread rains halted work on Sunday. For the week, there were 5.1 days suitable for field work in Iowa, compared to the 5-year average of 2.9 days. Moisture shortages steadily increased through the week until late-week rains quickly saturated soils. By week's end, topsoil moisture and subsoil moisture was rated 95% and 94% good to excellent, respectively. Statewide, corn planting advanced to 47% complete, far ahead of last year's 3% progress and 4 days ahead of the 5-year average. Oat seeding progressed to 93% complete, 3 weeks ahead of last year's pace and almost 2 weeks ahead of the 5-year average. Oat emergence at 29% exceeded last year's pace, but lagged behind the 36% average for this date. Soybean planting had begun, but only advanced to 2% complete. Fertilizer applications progressed to 88% complete, 23 percentage points ahead of last year and 8 percentage points ahead of the 5-year average. This is Greg Tayson from USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, Iowa Field Office.
This is Becky Summer of the USDA National Agricultural Statistics Service, Nebraska Field Office, with the crop weather report for the week ending April 26, 2009. Temperatures averaged 2 degrees above normal throughout the state. Precipitation was minimal except for portions of southeast and extreme east-central Nebraska. Warm temperatures at midweek brought soil temperatures to near 60 degrees for the first time this season. Corn planting is a quarter of the way complete, a week ahead of last year and 4 days ahead of the average. Oats planted made a large jump as well, with over two-thirds planted and a quarter has emerged. Wheat conditions improved from last week and rated 73% good and excellent and remained above last year and are beginning to join. Alfalfa pasture and range conditions were mostly good or excellent and above last year. Calving is over 90% complete with normal calf losses reported. This is Becky Summer of the USDA's NAS Nebraska Field Office in Lincoln.
This is Doug Hartwig, Director of USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office, with the weekly crop weather report for the week ending April 26, 2009. Spring tillage and seeding progressed under generally favorable weather conditions throughout the state this past week. Daytime highs soared into the low 90s across the south, and precipitation was primarily confined to late in the week, allowing 5 days suitable for field work statewide. Soil moisture supplies held steady as much-needed rains fell across southern Minnesota. Other farm activities included calving, equipment maintenance, and pastureland weed control. The opportunity for spring field work continued to vary across the state last week. Seed beds were drying and working up well under warm temperatures and strong winds across the south. Statewide, land prepared for corn was 56% complete, with 40% planted as producers capitalized on nearly ideal weather. Drying was comparatively slower across the central and north. where producers are beginning to work lighter, sandier soils. Northwestern producers remain the most limited as fields range from relatively wet to inaccessible due to earlier flooding. Spring wheat planted was 13% complete, compared to the five-year average of 23%. Soil moisture supplies are relatively unchanged from last week. Welcomed rains fell across the southern part of the state late in the week. However, topsoil conditions remain 21% short to very short statewide. Surplus moisture conditions exist across Northwest as earlier floodwaters continue to dissipate. This has been the Weekly Crop Weather Report for the week ending April 26, 2009. I'm Doug Hartwig, Director of USDA NASS, Minnesota Field Office.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, Hudsonville, Illinois, and Crescent City, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Tuesday afternoon. Usually we talk with Mike Wolverton at K-State, where he's an Extension Ag Economist. Mike is moving on, and in his stead, from this point forward, we will be talking to Dan O'Brien, who also is an Ag Economist there. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Thanks for joining us. We're looking forward to several discussions over the months. I'd like you to go through, at this point, a paper that you and Dr. Wolverton had been working on and some others that explains how ethanol plants manage to impact cash basis around them.
Yes. Of course, one of the major motivating factors for corn producers to support the development of ethanol plants in their locale, at least in the earlier part of this decade and prior to that, had to do with the impact that they were hoping that those plants would have on local supply-demand balances, i.e., having another demand center for corn along with either exports or cattle feeding or whatever. And because of that, then they were hoping to see increases in local prices. There was a major study, an important study, I guess I'd say, by a fellow by the name of Kevin McNew and another fellow in collaboration, Dwayne Griffiths, who looked at this throughout the 2001 through 2003 period, really the kind of the pre-heyday of the development of a lot of plants. And they did find some positive impacts from plant development. On average, they found about just under a 6 cent basis increase or improvement in on a per bushel basis across the 12 plants that they looked at, and in this study, it was important to have it to be looking at areas that didn't have a plant, and then to see if once the plant was established, what happened to the local price. So, the local basis, i.e., the local price, did improve on average about 5.9 or 6 cents in the 150-mile square radius. Pardon me, 150 square mile area centered around those plants, and. Right at the plants, they saw about a 12.5 to 13 cent increase. There were some distinctions, I guess, in looking at price impacts as they would as you were looking upstream from demand centers, say a major river terminal or whatever, as opposed to downstream.
Right.
And so some variations there.
Yeah.
And, go ahead, Todd.
Yeah, well, we're just about out of time, and we'll have to take it up again next week and continue the conversation, and we will do that if that's all right with you. Okay, Dan?
Sure, Todd. Great.
All right. Thanks much. Dan O'Brien is with K-State, and he joined us here on the Closing Market Report on a Tuesday afternoon.
It's National Blueberry Pie Day. Historians believe that pies can be traced back to the ancient Egyptians, bakers to the pharaohs incorporated nuts, honey, and fruits in a bread dough, a primitive form of pastry. Drawings of this can be found etched on the tomb walls of Ramses II in the Valley of the Kings. When it comes to pie pastries, credit generally goes to Greece, where pies were made by wrapping a water flour paste around meat. In 1620, the pilgrims brought their favorite pie recipes to the New World. On this day in agricultural history in 1753, Franz Karl Achard was born. A German chemist, Achard invented a process for the large-scale extraction of table sugar from beets. In 1801, he opened the first sugar beet factory in what is today Poland. After further research, he refined his process by using a suggestion from the Institute in France, indicating that fuel costs could be lowered by pressing the beets without cooking. In 1789, the most famous mutiny in history took place on the English ship Bounty against Captain William Bligh. The ship was sailing to Tahiti on an agricultural mission to bring back breadfruit trees. The hope was that the breadfruit plants would grow well in the West Indies and thus become a cheap source of food for slaves. The mutiny came with more than 1,000 breadfruit plants aboard. Those plants never made it to the West Indies. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. It's a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Todd Gleason. It is a Tuesday afternoon. Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, joins us to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast around the nation and the globe. Hey, Don, last week the boys in Iowa were really moving, and the farmers in Minnesota, they put a lot of corn in the ground, but they got stopped at the weekend, and they're probably waiting somewhat impatiently to continue their corn planting. Will they be able to roll, and those in the rest of the Midwest to go anytime soon?
I would recommend getting a good book. Unfortunately, we're about ready to hit a wet stretch of weather here. There's going to be quite a bit of precipitation starting Thursday in earnest, and then basically continuing off and on into the weekend and into early next week. The whole Midwest, from Iowa, from eastern Kansas and Nebraska, through the Great Lakes, the Ohio Valley, and even into the Northern Delta, there's going to be quite a bit of shower and thunderstorm activity, and there could be some significant amounts of moisture with this pattern. So it's not going to be terribly cool. In fact, temperatures are going to be pretty warm, but it is going to be wet again.
Well, do you have a good book recommendation for them? No, don't go there. I guess the men and women of rural America will have to sit on their hands just for a bit when they're trying to get into the field. And when will they be able to get back and put some hands on the steering columns of those big tractors?
It may be a couple of weeks, Todd. I think the late this week into next week and probably through all of it, there's going to be more systems coming on through. We do see a pattern change the week of May 11th that may end up bringing a warmer, drier pattern to many areas of the country, sort of getting ourselves into that early summer season maybe with weather patterns, but that's 2 weeks away before it gets started.
No, that's a long, long way away. I've heard several folks compare this, I think, to 1973. As you take a look at how this year is laying out, do you have any analogous years that you're using?
Well, I think there are some similarities actually to last year when we were cool and wet, more so wet. And I think there's some analogies to last year. And 73, I think, is a good year to look back as well. The pattern is really hanging on in terms of a winter-like weather pattern. The way the whole weather pattern, the way the jet stream is behaving, it's acting more like, let's say, something late March than late April-like. And when we see this type of weather pattern, where there's still a lot of cold air in the northern latitudes that come on in and collide with the warmer spring air, you're going to have precipitation. And it's a pattern that will probably take 10 or 14 days to work itself through.
We call some of that persistence. Why is it still around?
Well, we could talk about a lot of different factors about that, but one factor I think is important is that the water temperatures in the North Pacific cooled to slightly below normal again. This is what we had last spring, and that has kept a stormy weather pattern in the North Pacific, which has translated to stormy weather in the higher latitudes of Canada, Alaska, and that's translated to stormy, cooler weather as these systems enter the lower 48 states. And we also had another snowy, cold winter season up north that caused more snow cover, greater snow and ice fields, which in turn has kept temperatures a little bit colder a little longer.
Don, we hope when we talk to you next week that the planters will be moving and farmers will be out in the field and not stuck there.
Okay.
All right, thanks much. Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. He joins us here on Illinois Public Media's Closing Mark Report each and every Tuesday. Have a great afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.